Welcome into the Shoot Around, WGN Radio, WGNRadio.com. Sam Panionovich with you as we take you inside Chicago basketball every week on WGN. And lots to talk about this week. We will share stories about a day with the reigning NBA MVP. Steph Curry was in town. The Warriors got to business. And it's just fascinating to see all the things that Steph Curry brings to the table. And we'll share a little bit, actually a lot, about what he exactly does, not only for the game, but for the fans. Speaking of those Warriors, the Bulls were outclassed at home, and they continue to search for answers. We'll hear from Jimmy Butler on why the Bulls can't communicate defensively. On the south side of the city, Morgan Park High School boycotted their game against their biggest rival, and they took on Chicago Public Schools. There is a solution, though, and those two teams will play next week. We pay our respects to one of the best assistant coaches the league has ever known. He passed away at 91. Plus, we sit down with longtime Bulls public address announcer Ray Clay. You know that voice. He was courtside at United Center, also at Chicago Stadium, for the Chicago Bulls dynasty. We've talked quite a bit on this show about the Golden State Warriors and how electric they are and how basketball to them is poetry, wizardry. It's exceptional. The ball moves, it flows, everybody gets a touch. And for them, different players contribute every night. It's not just one guy like the Bulls. Derrick Rose has his night. Then Jimmy Butler has his night. Sometimes Pau Gasol has his night. For the Warriors, you better stop two or three guys every night or you're not going to beat them. And right now through 43 games, they have 39 wins. 39-4. But their go-to guy, Steph Curry, the reigning MVP in the NBA, came in and had 25-11-7 on Wednesday night. Now with Curry, though, it's more than just what he does on the court. It's what he brings to the table off the floor. And you got to see this up close and personal at the shoot-around the Warriors had at United Center Wednesday morning. The first image of Steph Curry is him running onto the floor looking like the happiest 8-year-old in the world. Smile from ear to ear as he runs out and breezes into his warm-ups. He's going with double basketballs, dribbling with both hands, between the legs, behind the back, throwing up countless swish after swish after swish. And he puts on a show, and that's what Curry really does. And it gets everybody going. Because the media is just filming B-roll. And he's in the corner, standing still, not even levitating for a jump shot, and pouring in 10 jumpers in the row from the corner. And then when he's done there, he goes to the top of the key from about 30 feet and throws in about 7 out of 10. Then he takes a step back on the Bulls logo, on the horn of the logo, that red painted tip of the horn. That's about 35 feet. Splash, splash, splash. He spends time with reporters for 10 minutes, answers every question, looks at you in the eye. He's so well-liked, so well-cultured. He understands that you have a job and that you want to tell his story the right way. And he's never, and I've seen him for a couple years now, 3 or 4 years. He's never turned down an interview with me. He chit-chats before the cameras and bright lights go on. He talks long after the game. And the pregame session is such a spectacle. And this is coming from somebody who grew up with Jordan and would go watch Jordan shoot around, but the show didn't really take place with Jordan in pregame. Jordan was already in killer mode. He was locked down and he was ready to hunt. He would put up his jump shots and he would back into the block and do his fadeaways and go through the layup lines and talk to opposing teams. Curry, though, knows that everybody in the building is watching him. He's probably the best shooter I've ever seen. Reggie Miller is right there, but Curry is already, and he's not even 30 yet. He's already about to surpass Reggie Miller, in my eyes at least. And there's a long way to go, of course. In that pregame warm-up, all eyes are on number 30. We're in Chicago, and there are more Curry jerseys than there are Rose jerseys. And Steph just sucks it all up. He's a sponge for that. There are cameras. People are taking pictures and videos, Vines, Instagrams, and he knows it. He's shooting shots from the tunnel, making them. That's 50, 60 feet. He signed autographs for about 10 minutes. He loves being a star, but he's a humble star that knows what he can do. He knows his power, and he wants to share that with you. So the Warriors blow out the Bulls, 125-94. Curry, like we mentioned, 25 points, 11 rebounds, 7 helpers. I asked Steph Curry after the game, and with this streak, 39 wins in 43 games, wins are wins. You'll take a win any night. But I asked him about coming into this building in Chicago at United Center. You walk through the front door, Michael Jordan statue's there. You're in there for pregame warm-ups and shoot-around, and all the banners are hanging, and Jordan's numbers retired next to Pippen's and Phil Jackson's and the 72-win banner and the 6 trophies. I asked him if it was any extra special to win in the house that MJ built.
Me and Draymond were stretching on the scores table before the game, and you hear the intro song and the anthem. Like, that brings back a lot of memories of watching, you know, the Jordan Bulls teams and all that. And there's something just gets you a little goosebump kind of feeling. But after that, I think more so for us, we haven't played well in this building since I've been here, except for last year. So we remember that stuff, and you want to try to rectify or correct it, you know, or get some momentum in opposing buildings that you normally don't play well in, and we were able to do that tonight.
Goosebumps before the game. The reigning MVP on the best team in the league that will probably win another championship tells me that he got goosebumps before the game. He's something special. Pau Gasol was asked after the game about Golden State's push for 72 wins.
Long ways to go, but they're on track and they played at high as well. Or I think they're playing the best basketball right now because of their personnel, how they play together, how they move the ball, and the weapons that they have out there. I mean, they play the perfect style for their roster.
That's a guy that's won 2 championships in the NBA. He knows what it takes to win. Now, he's never been on a team that came close to the 72 wins of the 95-96 Bulls. But he sees greatness, and he recognizes greatness with this Warriors club. I've told you once, I'll tell you 100 more times, if you are a basketball fan, go to the Warriors website after every game, watch that 2.5 to 3.5 minute highlight video. It's beautiful basketball, and it's here to stay. On the other side of that drubbing, 125-94, are the Bulls. And the Bulls are in good company because the Warriors, in their last 2 games, have beaten the 2 best teams in the East on the road by 65 points. They went into Cleveland, beat LeBron and company by 34, then beat the Bulls by 31. But the postgame comments continue to perplex me. And Jimmy Butler, after the Warriors' loss, talked more and more about the lack of communication defensively. And this is something that just can't happen. He says they don't talk on defense from time to time. And this was a team we know down to its core is rooted in defensive schemes. Tom Thibodeau, Ron Adams, communication, help defense. This team just doesn't do it. And they do it against the 76ers. And they've done it against the Wizards, and they've done it against the Pacers. But when you get into the postseason, you're going to face higher quality opponents. And I continue to worry about this team being able to win multiple playoff series. Jimmy Butler still has his concerns defensively, and he talked about that after the game.
You know, we'd be worried about offense too much at times. And we don't play no defense, we don't get back, we don't rebound. And it's not on our bigs, it's on everybody to help do that. But when we're not guard, I don't think we're a very good team.
Now, I'm not trying to get so worked up in one loss, and it was a bad loss. They got blown out at home against Golden State, which happens quite a bit. You know how many teams have gotten drubbed by Golden State this year at home? I don't have enough fingers to count. But with this team, the inconsistencies continue to flow. They can win 6 out of 7, but then they drop 3 out of 4 against bad teams. We've seen them lose to the Timberwolves and the Pistons and the Hornets. It is what it is. The Bulls are 24-17. Derrick Rose actually looked really good on Wednesday. Really, really good. And I've been a critic of his on the floor. I guess that double vision really was clouding his play. At the time, I was wondering why he kept shooting more than anybody else with said double vision, but Rose was good. 29 points, 2 assists, but nobody was shooting the ball well. Pau Gasol, 0 for 8. Tony Snell, 1 for 8. Taj Gibson, 2 for 6. Nico Mirotic, 0 for 5. Doug McDermott, 1 for 6. I got in this argument after the game about Derrick Rose. Well, he only had 2 assists. The Bulls were trash cans as a team. And Rose was 12 of 22. That's the second game in a row where he shot over 50%. He's actually averaging almost 20 in the month of January. Team is still inconsistent, though, and that's the problem. This roster continues to be in flux. You hear the trade rumors from all different angles. Will they trade Taj Gibson? They wanted to shop Joakim Noah, but now he's probably out until April or May. Pau Gasol, checking in, checking out, who knows? Lots of interesting storylines here. And no matter what happens at the end of this season, whenever the Bulls get bounced in the playoffs, and I hope you understand that they are not winning the East, they are not winning a title this year, not going to happen. I hope you've wrapped your hands around that. This roster next year is going to be way different. And that might not be a good thing. We had an extremely interesting storyline last week. The number one and number three teams in the Chicagoland area in Illinois high school basketball. Morgan Park is number one. Simeon is number three. The Battle of Vincennes, they call it. Morgan Park, 111th in Vincennes. Simeon, 81st in Vincennes, 30 blocks apart. It's probably a 15-minute drive. I've made it from time to time. In fact, in high school on the way to Mount Carmel, we would drive down Vincennes and pass both schools. 10 state titles between the two. Simeon with 7, Morgan Park with 3. Of course, Simeon had 4 in a row with Jabari Parker, 2 with Derrick Rose, 1 with Ben Wilson in the 80s. Morgan Park went back-to-back in 13 and 14, and they've got the best team in the state this year. But these two teams played earlier in the year. Morgan Park won at Simeon 70-65. So when it came time for the game last Saturday, supposed to be at Morgan Park is the home team. But in years past, because Morgan Park's gym is so small, it only holds about 250 people, they've moved it. And by they, I mean the principal, Carolyn Epps, and Chicago Public Schools have moved it to bigger venues. It was at Chicago State for a while. They tried this year to move it to Brooks High School, Gwendolyn Brooks, which is just across the expressway down on 111th. Then from there, it was Little Village, which is at 31st and Costner. Not a home game for Morgan Park. So there was a boycott led by Tiffany Burrell, one of the parents of one of the players on Morgan Park. Her son is Junior Romello Burrell. And they issued a statement. The parents were upset. And the quote was, "We will not allow our boys to play if the game is not in Morgan Park's gym." End quote. They wanted a response by the end of the day on Thursday, or else the kids would boycott the game. This is the best game in Chicago high school hoops. And I was at that game at Simeon. The capacity at Simeon's gym is 1,400, and they went over that for that game. They were turning away people by the hundreds, and security was having to deal with people banging on the glass doors. So that gym is too small. The problem is that Morgan Park has been trying to lobby for a new gym for years, and their head coach Nick Irvin has been very vocal about this. I don't know if you know the story. DNA Info was all over this last week. Walter Payton College Prep got $17 million in a tax increment financing fund that helped them build 11 classrooms, a new gym, a fitness room, a theater. Morgan Park's down there on the south side like, "Hey, we've been around since 1916. We've won 2 state titles in the last 3 years. Can we get a bone here?" And they're getting penalized for having too small of a gym, yet when they go to CPS to ask for money for a new gym, crickets. Silence. This is what this is. They are trying to take on CPS to eventually get that ball rolling and get money to build a new gym. That boycott went down. Those two teams didn't play last Saturday. The game has since been rescheduled. It will now take place next week, January 28th. And guess where they're going to play it? Morgan Park's gym. The parents win. The boycott served its purpose. Now, the next step for Morgan Park, aside from protecting home court, get that new gym. We close out the first half of the shoot-around this week with a legend that was recently lost. Johnny Bock, longtime American basketball coach, lost his life at age 91. And he was mostly known for being a defensive guru. He was the guy that built the Doberman defense that led the Chicago Bulls to their first three-peat. He utilized Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen, Horace Grant. He brought those guys to greatness. And he taught them about responsibility, trusting each other, and blending into one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference that eventually put that defense to work and stopped Isaiah Thomas and the Bad Boy Pistons to win those first three rings in 91, 92, and 93. Johnny was a lifer. Johnny played for the Boston Celtics and then became a coach in 1950 at 26 years old. Went through the college ranks, Fordham and then Penn State, got a crack with the Warriors as an assistant, did some head coaching, and then the Bulls brought him in 1986, and he built that defense from scratch. Now, it helps to have the players and the talent, but the scheme is almost as important. And I got to know Johnny pretty well because Howard Moore would bring him into UIC. He would bring Johnny in just to pick his brain. And Johnny would sit there at UIC practice on the sidelines and take notes on that old. The notebook was so old, it used to be white. It was pretty much cream. That's how long it had been sitting around. And he would scribble down notes in that shaky cursive handwriting, and he would diagram plays with X's and O's. This guy just loved the game. He was still coaching at Fenwick in his late 80s. He was going to high schools around the area and teaching kids about defensive stances and about help defense and about trust. They celebrated Johnny Bock's life on Wednesday morning at Old St. Pat's Church, and how fitting that Steve Kerr and company were in town with the Warriors. Of course, Kerr played for the Bulls. Steve brought his staff. Fred Hoiberg brought his staff. Former players John Paxson, Horace Grant, Bill Wennington, Craig Hodges, Stacey King, Pete Myers all attended, shared stories. Doug Collins was in the house. Michael Reinsdorf was there. Johnny Red Kerr's family was there. A former Fenwick player. We just talked about Bock going to Fenwick. Bock talked this kid almost everything he knew. He showed up and paid his respects. Family and friends. The church was packed. And Johnny Bock got his due. The man was loved by so many, respected by many more, and he will certainly be missed as Johnny Bock has passed at age 91. Coming up on the shoot-around, we talk with former Bulls public address announcer Ray Clay. You may not know the name. I promise you, you know the voice. He's got endless stories from that Bulls dynasty. That is next on the shoot-around on WGN. Day. When I hear that song and I hear that voice, I still get goosebumps. The voice you just heard, former public address announcer. He sat courtside for the Bulls dynasty, currently does work for UIC. He's also announced for the Chicago Sky, but you know him as the voice, the former PA voice of the Chicago Bulls. He is Ray Clay, joining us on the shoot around on WGN Radio. Hey, Ray, how are you?
I'm wonderful, Sam. Thanks. How are you?
I'm great. When you hear that back and you hear Sirius blasting out of those speakers and you hear those old tapes of you announcing those championship teams, what's the first thing that crosses your mind?
The first thing that crosses my mind is waiting for my cue when it's my turn to start, because you don't want to screw that up, because everybody knows that you have to do, you know, your world champion Chicago Bulls. Boom! So I think that's the first thing that I think of. And the second thing that I think of is, God, I was a lucky guy to be able to be there for all of that.
Yeah, the position opens up in the late 80s, early 90s, and it's funny because I'm sure that's a job that was pretty coveted. You have a blossoming young team, Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Horace Grant, Phil Jackson. How did that job come about? How did you find out? How did you kick that door open?
Well, it was kind of funny. Being a big Bulls fan, I had done some work. I worked at the University of Illinois in Chicago, and I had done some work with our intramural department with some basketball tournaments. We did some three-on-three tournaments. And during those old days, we were able to go to the Chicago Stadium and run our tournament there prior to a Bulls game. And then at halftime, we were the halftime entertainment. We had our two final men's teams and two final women's teams, and they played 10 minutes of three-on-three basketball, and that was it. So I got to know some of the Bulls staff members from doing that. Finding out about the opening of the job was kind of ironic. I was driving to a wedding with my wife, and we're sitting in the car, and I said, "Oh, it's time for the Bulls game." So we turned the radio on, and they say, "And this is Tommy Edwards' last game as the announcer for the Chicago Bulls." And, they go through the starting lineup and everything. And my wife goes, "Boy, that would be a great job for you." And I said, "Yeah, it would be." I said, "But, this is the Chicago Bulls. I'm sure they've got somebody in line who's going to apply for that or who's going to get that job. And, we're getting ready for the playoffs." So she says, "Why don't you give them a call and see?" So I called down to the Bulls office and talked to the fellow who I knew. And he said, "Oh, you announce basketball games?" I go, "Yeah, I work at UIC and I do the basketball announcing there." And he says, "Well, send me a tape and we'll give it a listen." So I sent him a tape, and that's how it's all started.
And they bring you in to do a game. How nervous were you for that first impression?
I was very nervous. They said, "Well, we'd like to have you audition by doing a game." And I said, "Oh, okay."
No practice.
Right, no practice, just come on in, sit in the chair, and the lights go out and 18,676 fans go wild. So I went there and I got there a little bit early, and I started working on, the introduction and the rest of the game things that I needed to do. And I had everything written down on my sheet of paper, and he says, "Now, remember, Ray, we play the music, we turn the lights out, and then it's your turn to announce the starting lineup." And I go, "Yeah, that's pretty good, but I wrote it all down on a piece of paper. How am I going to be able to do that?" And they said, "Well, there's a little red glow that comes off of the Bulls' head up on the scoreboard, and I think you'll probably be able to see something."
It worked itself out, certainly.
Yeah, luckily for me, yeah.
We used to sit, my dad had season tickets, section 321, row 1, seats 1 and 2. It was always a fight. Would Dad bring my brother? Would he bring me? I usually won because I was older. But I'll tell you what, Ray, if we were late, God help my father, if we missed you doing your thing before the game. Because to me, as a kid, that was more important oftentimes than even watching the game.
I hear that quite a bit. Everybody says, "Oh, we used to watch the game on television," or "We used to be in the stadium watching the game, and we had to make sure that we were there early and down to our seats so that we could hear that."
Well, I just remember being there, and then when you would start, you'd go through the lineup, from Central Arkansas, 6'7", Scottie Pippen, and then you'd move to the forward and then the man in the middle. But when you got to Jordan and you said, "From North Carolina," you couldn't hear anything because the people just went bananas.
Yeah, the stadium, the noise in the stadium was overwhelming. I often joked with people that, if it wasn't on television or the radio, I could have said "From North Carolina, Bugs Bunny," and, nobody would have known.
Can we get a Michael Jordan introduction?
"From North Carolina, at guard, 6'6", Michael Jordan."
What's your favorite Jordan memory? There are so many, and it doesn't even have to be one of him playing. It could be something that maybe happened off the floor. Maybe it could be anything. What is your favorite memory of MJ?
The guy did so many amazing things, during the games, on and off the court, that it's hard to remember. But one that really does stick out in my mind was when Michael played for the Washington Wizards, and it was his last game. I mean, his season was over. It was the last game. Washington was playing at Philly. And I get a phone call from Philadelphia. And they go, "Ray, we know this is Michael's last game, and we thought it would be kind of cool to have you come out and introduce Michael in his last ever game." So I said, yeah, it's kind of cool. So I flew out to Philly and got down to the court and met their PA guy. And he says, hey, I'm going to announce, you know, the first four starting guys for Washington. And then the lights are out and the music's going to start and you introduce Michael Jordan. So I'm out on the court and, you know, nobody really knows that I'm there. And they get to that last guy and the music starts and I hit the from North Carolina. And all of a sudden, Michael runs out and he starts, you know, sort of looking around and you got a smile on his face. And one of the guys on the Wizards points that I'm over in the spotlight. And Michael looks at me and he runs over and gives me a big hug and he says, hey, thanks. That was really cool.
That's 2003. Let's take it back to 1992. There hadn't been a championship, a major professional championship, won on home field, turf, court, hardwood, whatever you want to call it, in a long time. You're courtside 1992 when the Bulls beat the Blazers, and Michael and Scotty and company, they jump on the scorer's table after they win, and they're throwing two fingers up. You had to be right there.
They were standing right in front of me, and I'm sitting there going, you know, I have things that I'm supposed to announce, and
wow.
I'm going, nobody's going to listen to me. So I just, you know, had my camera, and I just stood there in awe of the proceedings.
So let's talk about how this ended, and we'll segue off of that, because when Michael left the Bulls, obviously you're still there. You spent 12 and a half years with the Bulls, but Jordan comes back with Washington, and it still bothers me to this day that there was a tussle because Bulls brass wanted to have you announce Jordan just like a regular player. That's just not right. And to this day, I still think that.
You know, I think about that, and I know that, you know, I probably misspoke. The Bulls were playing the Lakers. It was in December at one point, and one of the L.A. sports writers who used to work in Chicago came up to me and said, hey, Ray, it's got to be exciting. Michael's coming back with the Wizards next month, and, you know, you get to announce him. He says, you know, how are you going to announce him? I said, I really don't know. I said, I haven't talked to anybody, but, you know, I would assume he's Michael Jordan. You know, he's going to get the from North Carolina Michael Jordan thing. And, you know, all of a sudden somebody from the Bulls front office comes down and, you know, starts saying, you know, what are you telling people what you're going to do? He says, you know, Michael's a visitor. You're going to announce him as a visitor. And I said, okay, you know, I work for you. I'll announce him any way you want me to announce him. And it just seemed to go downhill from there.
Yeah, but Michael Jordan wasn't Joe Smith. And it turns out, Ray, that you were right because the very next year they gave him the proper announcement.
Right, yeah, the very next year, you know, Steve Scott took over for me, and, you know, you listen to that game, and Steve's giving him the from North Carolina deal.
The famous Ray Clay, the voice of the Bulls dynasty. He did the public address work for a long time with the Chicago Bulls, with us on the Shoot Around on WGN Radio. The good thing, though, for you about that Bulls gig is it makes you pretty popular, and a lot of things came your way. You were in Married with Children. You were in He Got Game. Has that really sunk in that all that you were able to do just from sending in a tape and doing Bulls public address, all the doors that opened up?
Yeah, it was amazing. I always thought of myself as a guy from Berwyn, Illinois. And all of a sudden, here I am, you know, thrust out in front of the world with the world champion Chicago Bulls and, you know, getting phone calls from all over. You know, can you do this? Would you be interested in this commercial? Would you like to do this or do that? You know, it was just mind-boggling.
How did He Got Game come up?
I was sitting in my office one day, and I got back from a meeting, and my secretary goes, and I don't know if it's one of your buddies pulling your leg, but Spike Lee called you. And, you know, we had some friends that, you know, we joked around with, and, you know, people would call and, you know, say different things. And I go, Spike Lee, and I look at it, and it's a 212 number. And I go, well, it's New York. You know, I wonder if somebody's really going to a far extent to try to, you know, pull one over on me. So I call the number, and here's Spike answering the phone. Hey, Ray. Hey, how you doing? It's Spike. And he said that he's got this movie coming out, and the Knicks were in Chicago, and he was coming to the game, and he wanted me to do the Jesus Shuttleworth introduction for the movie.
Hey, this is Spike. No assistant, nothing.
No, it was Spike. He answered his own phone.
Direct line, wow. And then you did the top 10 list with Letterman, too.
Right, yeah.
What was the topic?
Fun. It was the top 10 ways to say Vinny Testaverde. It was the show right before New Year's Eve. And he always had a show where he brought a football player out, and the joke of the show was that they had a Christmas tree, and they tried to knock the star off the top of the Christmas tree by throwing a football at it. And, you know, for some reason, I ended up happening to end up being on that show. So, you know, I got out there, and, you know, I had to introduce Michael Jordan in the very beginning. You know, Dave says, let's throw it over and to Ray Clay. And I do the, you know, from North Carolina, Michael Jordan. And the camera pans over to where the guests would walk out from behind stage. And it's there, and it's there. And David goes to me, he goes, Ray, he's not here, is he? I go, nah, I said, but, you know, every time I get on television, I just think that that's what I want to do.
Oftentimes in doing the research for these interviews, you come across things that you didn't really know about somebody. And lo and behold, I found a YouTube video of a wedding reception in Denver. And whose voice is leading the bridal party down the stairs and into the reception? It's Ray Clay's voice. How does that come about? How are you doing a wedding in Denver?
Well, I actually wasn't there. I actually make some CDs for people. I'll get a phone call, quite a few phone calls, I should say, about people saying, I grew up with the Bulls, and, you know, I've been a Bulls fan all my life, and I talked my wife into introducing the wedding party to the Bulls introduction music, and couldn't have anybody else but you do it. So I got a phone call from this guy, and I didn't know that, you know, the wedding was in Denver. I just, you know, thought it was a regular wedding. So I announced his wedding party, put it on a CD, and mailed it off to him. And all of a sudden, my son calls me one day, and he goes, Dad, you're trending on Twitter. And I go, what does that mean? He goes, I don't know. Everybody's talking about you on Twitter. And I go, well, what did they do? And he says, something about a wedding that you introduced in Denver.
Those are the perks from all those young Bulls fans growing up.
That's true. Everybody's getting married at this point.
So I can only imagine how busy life was. You retired from UIC. You were an educator. You worked at the campus. And then you have to kind of stay up, go to the Bulls games, maybe get home sometimes 10:30, 11, 11:30 at night. I'm sure that was tough on you, maybe tough on the family at times. But now that you are retired and the schedule has lessened quite a bit, what does Ray Clay do for fun? What are his hobbies?
Ray Clay's hobbies. I collect a lot of junk, so my wife's always on me to, you know, clear my stuff away. And being a teacher is good because I do have my summers off, so I like to hit the golf course a couple times a week and whack the little ball around.
And you're going to do this as long as you can, as long as the voice holds out?
I'm going to try to do it as much as I can. You know, it's a great part-time job. It lets me see my friends from the old Bulls days and keeps me involved a little bit in sports. And, yeah, as long as the pipes are holding up, we'll see how long we can do it.
What's the trick? Is it tea? Is it some people say whiskey, lemon water? Any tricks?
You know, when I first started out, I was drinking ice-cold water while I was announcing, and I had some soreness in my vocal cords, and I ended up talking to a fellow who was a vocal coach, and he says, oh, no. He says, you need to drink lukewarm water. He said, you know, putting ice on it, you know, tightens up your muscles, and your voice is a muscle. So I just, you know, drink a little bit of warm water before I announce, and hopefully I don't get sick.
For all those young broadcasters, all those kids that want to be announcers and do some of the things that you've done in your career, what's the advice? Because times can be tough and the jobs might not always be there, but what's your advice for a young potential broadcaster slash announcer?
Yeah, there really are jobs out there. You really need to go and look for them. Quite a few jobs don't pay anything or don't pay much, but, you know, don't be scared to go in and earn your way through the job. You know, learn while you're on the job and be lucky enough to be in the right place at the right time when somebody remembers, hey, I remember this kid. He volunteered for us back at such and such high school, and now all of a sudden we're looking for somebody, and here's a job available for you.
He sat courtside for 12 and a half years with the Chicago Bulls, the courtside voice of the Bulls dynasty, 6 championships, and you can still hear him now at UIC. It's always fun to walk past you as I call the games on TV. You're still doing your thing over at UIC, and you're always approachable. The stories are endless. The memories for me are always going to be special, and I really appreciate you coming on, Ray. Thank you.
Thank you a lot, Sam. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to The Shootaround. We'll be back next week. For all things Chicago basketball, it's very simple. WGNRadio.com. Search for The Shootaround.